Want to be a part of the conversation? Then let us know on the TNT Radio Interactive Live chat room at tntradio.live. Lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's news talk, TNT Radio. Deprogram with Michael Parker on today's news talk radio, TNT.
It is hour two of Deprogram, and in this hour, we'll be joined by Edward Curtin. In about 15 minutes, John Matlin will be back in just a second. Before we get to all of that, I saw a story today. I saw this one actually on Breitbart, but it's probably in other media as well. But it says, a unanimous vote, Senate passes legislation to ban TikTok from U.S. government devices. You know what? I mean, I'm glad about that, but let's be honest. The horse is already out of the barn. I mean, I have never had TikTok because for as long as I can remember, the fact that it was a bit of a backdoor access for China to your information, I mean, that was to me synonymous with the name TikTok. And I don't remember exactly at what point we came to all know this, but as long as I've known about TikTok, I feel like I've known about this too. So while I welcome this type of legislation, I think it's a bit too late. Now, that's not to say that we shouldn't recognize it, we shouldn't get rid of it, but I'm concerned that, you know, it's a day late, a dollar short. Now, quite a few people are jumping on the bandwagon about this, you know, which is good. And there are some states that have been very pro in getting rid of TikTok, and Governor Kristi Noem of South Carolina, Kristi Noem of South Dakota, Governor Henry McMaster, South Carolina, Gregory Abbott of Texas, all of these people have been very vocal about TikTok. And yeah, it is a problem. It is a Trojan horse, and we've known that for quite a while. In 2020, under President Trump, the administration tried to ban TikTok, but it essentially just resulted in the parent company divesting the platform to an American company. And so now we still have it. It's still immensely popular. I don't know what the most popular social media platform is, but I would say amongst young people, it is probably, I would guess, TikTok or Instagram, one or the other, because it's more based on quick content, visual, engaging, short piece content that is more appealing to young people. So it is still a major force on the social media landscape. We'll have to see what ends up happening with this. There are other companion bills that are being introduced into the House, and not the deal is, of course, it shouldn't be on government employee phones. It shouldn't be on state government employee phones, but you could go further and say, well, it really shouldn't be on anybody's phones. If it is, in fact, this much of a national security issue, which I think it is, basically you're just aggregating content from all of these American people on trends, things they like, things they're discussing, the whole nine yards. Data is the new currency, right? I mean, data is the new currency. That's what all of these people who are in the tech game, that's you are the product, as they say. If it's free, it's because you are the product. And the product is not you, the biological human. It is all the data that goes with you and all of the trends that they can then predict, or the things that they can discern from gigantic swaths of information gathered from huge amounts of people who didn't read terms of service agreements. And listen, I'm not saying that I do either. It's, you know, but I do try to be aware of what I put on my phone. And I'm sure that I'm being traced by God knows what even now. And I do try to stay on top of that. And if I do read bad things about various platforms or apps, I try to stay away from. And like I say, TikTok, I have never had it on my phone a single time. But my daughters have it, and we're all on the same plan. So who knows what access, who knows, man. Did you guys know there are many ways you can listen to TNT Radio? Why not stream us direct from our website, on our desktop, tablet, or mobile device, or download our app from the App Store? We even stream live on YouTube, Rumble, and Odyssey. We've got you covered on TNT Radio.
keeping the commitment 24/7.
I come to you for facts. I really appreciate what you and your team do.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
We have watched attempts to recall officials pick up steam in the past few years, but not achieving success at the finish line. Another one is brewing in the Big Easy, New Orleans. And here to discuss this is TNT News producer John Madlin.
Yeah, so New Orleans, Louisiana is in the midst of a mayoral recall effort for LaToya Cantrell. Mayor Cantrell has been given the name LaToya the Destroyer by some residents of the Big Easy. Yeah, a big and that's no joke. I've had people, as I was doing independent journalism before I came back to TNT Radio, Michael, and I have quite a spread out following around the world. And somebody said, I am so sad to say this. This is my city. And we all refer to her here on the streets as LaToya the Destroyer. So that's right from a citizen's mouth of New Orleans. Yeah, right from the horse's mouth, as they say. So a big reason to as why she's being recalled is New Orleans is currently the murder capital of the United States of America. Violence has spread through the streets at an alarming rate. And as I've stated on TNT in the past, just last year in the summer of 2021, so 2021, I was across the street from a bar singing in a karaoke piano dueling bar. And a shooting took place about 30 yards from me where multiple people were shot. And that was the second week in a row, I believe. It might have even been the third week in a row on the same block of Bourbon Street that happened. So this has just been gaining steam and it goes unanswered. So the mayor is allegedly now missing city meetings and events. Police are almost at a non-existent staff. The numbers are dismal, and calls for help that go to 911 go unanswered for hours. Now there are questionable trips and expenditures as well, which is very bizarre. So the mayor has all of this right now going on and is traveling at times internationally at first-class rates on taxpayer dollars. The good thing is TV ads sprung up just last month along with mailers about the recall, a surprise to those close to the mayor, as originally this group was dismissed as any real threat to the mayor's term. The mailers are being sent with petitions that the voter can vote, can fill out the petition and send back with no cost at all to the person that's sending it back, creating a real avenue to accomplish the goal of removing LaToya the Destroyer. The mayor, Cantrell. The numbers are awful. 248 murders this year, while in 2021, there were 218 murders, which were both the highest rates since Hurricane Katrina back in 2005. So city has approximately 377,000 residents as per the 2021 U.S. Census Bureau. That's the amount of people that are living there, making the math equal up to 140% increase in murders. The claim is they have 1/3 of the required signatures needed for this recall. They need over 53,000 but aim for 70,000 because the registrar will disqualify ones deemed not to be a match in signatures or not an official resident and things of that nature. The claim from the mayor is, and the mayor's team is, that this is a Republican-backed attempt to undermine and discredit the first black woman mayor of New Orleans. So it always goes to race and sex as we play identity politics. But it must have nothing to do with the fact that they're traveling around the world, on taxpayer dollars, and the fact that murders are up 140%. This is bananas. And I've said this on the radio before. This is my favorite city in the world. I've traveled there 8 times. And every time I've gone, I've watched it get worse and worse to the point where there is people stampeding down Bourbon Street after a shooting last summer. So this is 100% a case, if you ask me, for refunding police, Michael. And are we seeing a trend here with liberal cities? What's your take?
I think 100%. I just got through speaking in the first hour with a 41-year law enforcement veteran of a Chicago suburb. And yes, I mean, even before I finished reading this article, I'm like, well, this woman has got to be a Democrat because they are terrible these days at managing crime in their cities. And that idea that, you know, once again, this is some kind of a Republican attack on a woman or a person of color is ridiculous. No, she's doing a terrible job. And to see that she's doing a terrible job. It seems like one of the people, one of the main people behind this recall is one of her own former employees. And this Eileen Carter is a former social media manager of Mayor Cantrell. And she's basically, what did she say here? It was quiet quitting or something. She said, you know, the lady has just essentially quit on the job. That's one of her own former employees.
I mean, it's obvious when you see all of this, and there's people in the police department. You know, I have a lot of friends that were with me from the NYPD that were down in New Orleans when that shooting happened. And they discussed with some of the police that were there present that there is stationed in at least in August of 2021 for all of Bourbon Street, which is the main epicenter of where all the tourists are and where all of the crime could be to, you know, extort those tourists of their money, drug deals, everything. There is two police officers that are stationed on the actual manifest for Bourbon Street sector. So that's thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people. So when you say, okay, I've gone to Bourbon Street, I've saw more than two cops, those cops are being pulled off of where they're supposed to be patrolling to cover that, which leaves another place completely uncovered. So you take your hand off one hole that's leaking water onto the ship and you put it on the other. And this is why people are waiting hours for 911 calls. It's, you don't have time for a 911 call if you say, somebody's breaking into my home. And you say, okay, well, we'll be there in the next 3.5 hours. By that time, the whole house is empty and everyone's dead. Yeah. That's the reality of the situation. And if you can call this out and then you're being told that it's a 3-check box, Michael. It's Republican, woman, and ethnicity. So in this case, black. Yes. So if that's the case, you know what you could say? This is where you forge something forward. Okay, so then get another black woman that is a Democrat and put them in power. And then see if it gets any better, because I can promise you it's not going to get any worse than an increase of 140% in murders. So play the game, play this identity politics game, and put somebody in that checks all these boxes, because the one that's in there right now has completely defaulted on her duties.
And on this recall, you were mentioning how they're trying to get 70,000 signatures. The one thing that I would say to the people who are organizing this is, whatever you do, don't do what California does, because we failed at our gubernatorial recall. We failed at the Los Angeles recall of Gascon. So basically, the things that we did, don't do that. And a lot of people, you know, I'm guessing in Louisiana, New Orleans, it's, you know, we've already got a trouble getting people to sign petitions for anything, to vote. And there's just a general malaise when people see things like this not function over and over. But, and I'm not saying that to poo-poo this idea. This woman should definitely be removed from the job based on what we're seeing here, because she clearly does not care and is quite arrogant. So I wish them luck, but just don't do what we did here in California. It did not succeed.
You could definitely use it as a manual of what not to do, what pitfalls there were. But, you know, the thing is, with 377,000 residents, if you're getting steam, you know, this just needs a little backing, and that's not hard to do. If they're getting on TV and they're sending these petitions out to registered voters, and they have return addressed envelopes that don't have to be paid, you could make a very big dent in getting this. And then it's about getting the people out, and then, of course, the integrity of the election. So, you know, you do need to get those 70,000 signatures. You for sure do. And there's a big problem between the education level of a voter and what you need to do. And what I mean by that is, listen, I follow politics very, very closely, have my whole life. When I ran for office, it was like, you know, when the giraffe comes out and is born and they can't walk right and they're stumbling around. That's the reality. People don't know about the petitions. They don't know what's needed or what goes into this. And some people don't want to sign something. And they're like, how do I know this is even legit? If they don't know it's legit and the narrative is controlled by the media, you're not going to want to sign it. And I knew that because I was involved with this and seeing all of my volunteers going up to people, asking them for signatures. And I'm talking to them, explaining to them what goes on. And many people don't even know that politicians have to go through signatures. I've heard stories of people that would file and say, okay, I'm running. And then when the time comes for the ballot and they look and they're like, why is my name not on there? They didn't petition to get on the ballot. there's a lot that goes through. And when I supplied 3,510 signatures, after the registrar and the Board of Elections went through it, they verified 2,400, which meant they got over 1,100 signatures removed because of signature issues, or if the person wasn't registered properly or was out of the district. So you do have to overshoot because they will remove these.
Well, I hope for the sake of New Orleans, which I concur with you, is one of the greatest cities in the United States, if not the world. I hope for their citizens and for the future of the city and the state that they do remove this woman, because she's not doing any good. And I got to be honest, living in Texas, I would go to New Orleans and it's spooky. But that's part of the flavor. But I mean, it's always been a little bit dangerous. And so I hope that they can get a lid on it and remove this woman.
Yeah, I think that I'm a lucky case, having gone 8 times, and I walk around that French Quarter without any issue. If people look at me, I guess they know I have that New York. I'm from a city person, so I understand what's going on, and I think they know, like, you know, criminals look at you and decide if you're an easy target. I think they know I would swing back, so that's probably why I've evaded the problem.
Well, you are also a reasonable man, and you don't go make trouble and act silly. So,
that's true too.
You're a good tourist. John Matlin, thank you so much. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll be joined by Edward Curtin. So stick around, folks.
TNT Radio's David McBride and Dr. Robert Brennan.
Mr. John Shipton, the father of Julian Assange.
I don't want to sound like, a genetic determinist, but you were an anti-war activist way back. You have certain sensibilities in terms of your being a dissenter, and so is Julian. To what extent do your political views align, and what's your relationship with him like?
Well, to be frank, love is the only thing that can transcend pain and guilt. And the example is, of course, the mother kissing it better when the child falls and scraps its knee or its elbow. Or, of course, in the case of thalidomide children, where the devotion of a parent allows the child to grow up into and have sufficient character to deal with the circumstance of having no other. So that is one element. The other element is that it seems nowhere else to go. I don't want to use Margaret Thatcher's phrase, but there just simply was no other direction to go in once Julian in 2019, June, said, "Will you come back and give a hand?" And he wasn't. He was in very poor order.
McBride and Brennan, with David McBride and Dr. Robert Brennan on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
I view Al Sharpton as a poverty pimp.
Terrorism from white supremacy is the most lethal threat to homeland.
I walk outside every day in fear of white supremacy right here in the middle of the hood. Okay, yeah, right.
My grandparents had a cross burned on their property. We were slaves in the past. We're free now.
I've never seen a white supremacist in my life. Never, and they can't point to one. Where the hell are they? I wish somebody would introduce me to a white supremacist. I would like to talk to them and take pictures with them, because I've never seen one in my life.
Biden says that the country is systematically racist. I almost want to look at him and say, haven't you been the system for the last 50 years?
He's the one that sponsored the 1994 crime bill, which unequivocally basically targeted black men in black neighborhoods.
The polarization. The left versus right, the black versus white.
Pro-choice against pro-life.
I work for Black Lives Matter. I'm sorry that I scared you.
People have had to make it like they're apologizing for their whiteness.
And could you just please apologize for your white privilege?
What was more disheartening to me is that those who are within the black community are allowing for that to take place.
So really what we're dealing with is a cultural Marxism that Joe Biden and all the rest from the left were trying to inculcate into our society.
Well, you were once the oppressor, so now I must be the oppressor. You don't avenge evil for evil.
It's okay to say disparaging things against white people. Our former president, Barack Obama, said it, about old white men are a problem. Except when it comes time for him to fly around on their airplanes and ride around on their yachts, or be their next door neighbors, or endorse them for president like Joe Biden. then old white men are okay. This is their last gasp.
What do progressive socialists really want?
Watch Systematic Deception at SalemNow.com.
Info at your beck and call.
An earful of information.
Driving the news cycle.
Just tell your smart device to play TNT Radio.
All righty, folks. Joining me this hour is Edward Curtin, and this is his first time on the show. I've been reading some of his work. He has a very lyrical writing style, which I like very much. And I think from the interviews that I've heard of him and the work that I've read that we are probably coming from similar places. You can find his website, EdwardCurtin.com, and that's CURTIN.com. And I think the place that I'll start with Edward today is an article that he published just recently in the last couple of days, I think, actually on the 10th. And I love this title, Our Authentically Fake and Hypocritical Society of Copies. Edward, welcome to Deprogram.
Thanks a lot, Michael. Glad to be here.
In this article, you start out the article with an example of something that I wasn't aware of, and I'm a big Bob Dylan fan, that there is a Simon & Schuster book that is being sold right now for a lot more money than I can afford, that is a new Dylan book, The Philosophy of Modern Song. And for those who are hardcore fans with enough extra change in their pocket, they could get it with an autograph. Unfortunately, when they got it, they found out it wasn't really an autograph. It's just essentially a stamp of his signature. And the publisher, you know, created this little apology. Dylan apologized. But this is, you mentioned this as kind of a metaphor for all the fakeness that's across our society. But I think this is pretty bad, actually.
Yeah, I think it is also, and has been for a long time.
Yeah.
This is just a recent example.
Yes.
That popped out to me. I love Bob Dylan's music.
Yeah, me too.
You know, I think he's a genius songwriter and singer. But this is something else again. It's an example of a culture of the copy, a culture of the fake, in the name of authenticity. It's an Alice in Wonderland world. Upside down.
I'm trying to find the description of how they did this. Essentially, because Simon & Schuster, they essentially, what they said to the people who complained about it, you know, they made it sound like it was almost a mistake that they shouldn't be blamed for, but internally they knew they should. And for Bob Dylan, who I have a great deal of respect for, it's like, come on, Bob. I mean, you had to be hip to this. So, when you charge people a lot of money and you're playing with the emotions of those who are the fans of an idea or a person or the music or the artwork of someone, and you tell them they're going to get a signed piece of memorabilia and it's instead just another effect part of the printing process, that's just a blatant lie to me.
Yeah, it sure is. You know, how guilty Dylan is in all of this. His apology, and his apology he said at the time when he was supposedly signing these books or pages of the books before the books were put together, he was suffering from vertigo, and then COVID happened and blah, blah, blah. So I don't really know. I've written a lot about musicians or a lot. Well, I've written maybe 7 or 8 pieces about people like Frank Sinatra and Kris Kristofferson and Leonard Cohen and who else? I mean, a lot of really, and I don't know any of these. I've never known them personally, so I can't speak about them as people. But their music is great. And you know, I leave the stuff aside.
Well, the reason I bring it up is it's kind of the prelude to what we're going to talk about, which is, and it's something we talk about on the show a lot, and that's part of the reason I call it Deprogram, but it's just this, you call it a fabricated reality and copies of copies, and you go on to say, what does repetition do to the mind? What does repetition do to the mind? Very clever And that's what media does. It puts ideas out there. It focuses on some. It omits others. And then it says things to you over and over again until you believe it.
Yeah, exactly. I had to laugh in a sick way. New York Times has a headline today, a quote, "An alternative reality, how Russia's state TV spins the Ukraine war," end quote. And you could just reverse the whole thing and talk about the New York Times spinning every day the Ukraine war. And this is based on, this is hilarious, this is based on intercepted emails, supposedly, from this Russian news foundation, I forget the name of it, which is exactly what the New York Times and their friends in the media have not asked the U.S. government to forgive Julian Assange for. And here is the New York Times publishing this stuff today. It's quite unbelievable.
Yeah, the hypocrisy's off the charts. I speak with Edward Curtin. We're going to take our bottom of the hour quick news break. Edward is here with us through the remainder of the hour, so we've got a lot to talk about. Stick around.
Here's what's making news. TNT Radio News.
This is James O'Neill with a check of today's headlines. There was a unanimous vote last night in the U.S. Senate where they approved a bill to ban TikTok from government-owned phones and devices. A cold snap is now seriously threatening Germany's energy security, with the country now reportedly falling far short of hitting gas savings targets at 20% needed to avoid rolling blackouts. China reports new Omicron variant spreading in 9 provinces, stirring fear and distrust among citizens as mortuaries are overwhelmed.
Ho, 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 it's Santa Claus here from the North Pole. I've had letters from thousands of Americans asking me for a new president for Christmas.
The most common price of gas in America.
My husband, President of the United States, Joe Biden.
I was going to put him in.
Merry Christmas to all.
Merry Christmas.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Edward Curtin is my guest, and we are talking about media. And the title of this December 10th piece by Edward is "Our Authentically Fake and Hypocritical Society of Copies." And it is quite confusing, to the point that I've said this on the show just in the last couple of days. Sometimes, Ed, when I see an article, sometimes it will seem so crazy to me that I have to think, okay, now wait a minute. Are they serious or is this satire? Because sometimes it seems like it's 50-50.
Yes, it often thinks feels like satire, that's for sure. A number of years ago, just to amuse myself, I wrote an article about a great new bit of research with pigs with small eyes. And I made up every word in the entire article, and it was then reprinted at science sites on different publications. And I had taken the whole idea for it from a Mad Magazine article from about 40 years ago. And people thought it was true. Yeah. It was absurd.
If it's in print, it must be true, right?
Yeah, exactly. And especially if you quote doctors, and which I did throughout, specialist in this, specialist in that, and you know they were studying pigs and comparing pigs to people, especially pigs with small eyes that would stare at you, and blah blah blah. So I like to have fun too, and joke.
Well,
many of my articles.
I like that. And you do have a way with words. You're quite clever. And earlier this week, we were talking about a story, because you bring up the WEF in this article as well. And we talk about the WEF a lot. I'm no fan. But anyway, we were talking about this article earlier this week, which did turn out to be satire. But it was something that I wasn't I wasn't sure if it was satire, and it also linked to another story from CNN that was based in fact, but the idea behind the satire piece was that the WEF was going to ask us all to essentially get rid of our pets because our pets have a carbon paw print. Well, that portion of the story was satire, but it did link to a CNN story where they used the same term, carbon paw print, and it was related to what we feed our pets, and we should be cognizant of that because dog and cat food is largely made from meat, and meat is, you know, a big contributor to CO2 emissions. Anyway, the point is that the WEF and organizations like that, nothing would surprise me.
No, nothing would surprise you coming from them.
Right.
They have some of the craziest crap that they put out, and they're selling it to a gullible public. And, you know, the whole idea of this electronic world, which is frightening in the extreme, electronic IDs, everything will be worked through the cell phone. I heard you mentioning your phone earlier in your show. And I personally have written quite a bit about the cell phone. And I think it's one of the most dangerous devices that's ever been invented.
We are somewhat, we're almost enslaved to them at this point, because if you were an invading civilization and you wanted to, let's see, I don't want to wage war on these people. I don't want to tear everything up. What if I could just get them to not fight back and completely comply? And that's what the phone does. It keeps us wound up in it. It keeps us from involving ourselves with other people in a real life situation. And it also allows for the fabricated reality that you discuss in the article.
Yeah, exactly. The whole digital world that we have now allows for propaganda to be so subtle, so insistent, so repetitive that it's just so insidious. And I don't think it's an accident.
No.
That this all came together at a particular time in history, the last 25 years probably, or maybe a little more. But, you know, it's an electronic world now for most people. That's where they live. But it's a world of delusions and illusions as well.
Well, and the deal is a lot of times, like with COVID and other issues where they will use computer models to depict a situation that could happen to steer your behavior into doing something or to get various laws and programs pushed. Here again, that's a fabricated reality within the digital realm.
Yeah, the computer, that's another funny subject. Computer models. I joke all the time with my wife about the weather forecast. You know, they're constantly predicting this, that, and the other thing. Using computer models, and there are different computer models, and there's a 30% chance of rain tomorrow, but that means that a 70% chance of non-rain, and if it rains,
right.
What percent? You know, it goes back on and on.
Yes.
1%.
Yes, and it's remarkable. Well, let me ask you this, because this year, I mean, well, actually for the last couple of years, but especially this year, so Ukraine has been the most discussed issue. And for the last couple of years before that, it was COVID. But these two single things have driven, well, I guess, and Trump and Biden as well, I guess, but mostly COVID and the Ukraine. These are the things that have occupied a gigantic amount of the social landscape and bandwidth, and the ideas that have been perpetrated through them. Again, it's almost like we're drowning in all of this.
Yeah, we are, and so many falsehoods. The Ukraine situation, for most people who follow it through the corporate mainstream news, is complete delusion. And like this New York Times article from today, which in which the Times claims that the Russian propaganda is saying that they're winning the war in the United States or Ukraine. It's really the United States through yes. Ukraine is losing. Yeah. Well, that's actually a fact and very, very true. This war is over. It's not over. The killing will keep going on, but there's no chance. But the United States is pushing and pushing and pushing, and it's getting really dangerous. Now with the Patriot missiles, they say they want to put into Ukraine. And we're approaching a very, very dangerous period of time when nuclear war becomes a very real possibility. And most people are just sleeping through it. They're just sleeping through it.
This Patriot missile thing, I read somewhere the other day, I don't know if it's true or not, but each one of those I think cost like $3 million to launch. I mean, the other thing that bothers me besides the humanitarian atrocity of all of this is just the fact that we don't even have any money. We've got a $31 trillion debt or something. And we just find all this money to give to other countries for a variety of reasons over and over again. So I would even argue that our own fiscal irresponsibility is a national security risk.
Well, it surely is. And the so-called money is not even really money. It's just fake money.
That too.
Just being generated out of, you know, and that's part of the whole fake world situation. And, sending all this money to Ukraine, of course, it's a great, great deal for the war manufacturers. And it's always about money and who's making the money and whose pockets the money is going into. And that goes on and on. And it's never been any different since, I would say, 1964.
And why do you pick that particular year? I know you've done a lot of stuff on the Kennedy assassination, but why 64?
Because they killed John Kennedy, the CIA and intelligence services, with help from other people. They killed Kennedy because he wanted to end the Vietnam War. He wanted to end the Cold War. He was for liberation of colonial peoples around the world. He had signed a nuclear treaty with the Soviet Union. He hated the CIA by that point, and he had a spiritual transformation, and they knew he was a great, great danger. He was to all of that money and that war mentality, and he had to go. That's why they killed him. And then they killed his brother, of course, in 68, and that was a government hit job. They killed MLK, the same reason. And all three of those guys connected war with the money machine, and they were very dangerous.
And this is an interesting point. We're going to take a break in just a moment. But part of the JFK assassination story, I've said this on the show before, and I've long believed this. It's like there are certain things that I don't know if we will ever have disclosure on. And I always point to the JFK assassination. It's like, I would like for them to disclose the truth, but at this point, it is just commonly accepted that, yes, he was murdered by a consortium of people. It wasn't, you know, Oswald. It was the CIA and other folks. But the point of this is a continuance of this false reality that we're expected to live under when we all know, even though it's never been disclosed, that that is not the truth.
Yes, and it's been going on. If I can mention my book of a year or two ago, it's called "The Seeking Truth in a Country of Lies." The first article I have in that book is called "Inside America's Dollhouse: A Vast Tapestry of Lies," and that's based on the work of New Orleans District Attorney Jim Garrison, who coined that term, the Doll's House. And the propaganda around the killing of Kennedy, which is really the template for what's going on today with electronic means. Now it's much worse, but it starts there, I think, and continues yes. down through this. If the government can kill the president, if the government can kill these anti-war leaders and economic justice leaders too, I must say, they are not just anti-war. They can do anything, and that's yes. why we've never had a president who will oppose these people.
Edward, when we return, I want to talk about this in the context of COVID, because I keep wanting to allege on the show, like, this is in my belief, and I know I'm not alone, this is a humanitarian crime of immense levels, and that's part of the reason that the government and the media will never fess. I mean, guys like Andrew Huff, who was on my show earlier in the week, saying, yes, this was a lab leak, or, you know, this was paid for by the U.S. government. Those things will come and go. But I don't know if there will ever be an actual announcement of this, because it would represent such an obvious, massive crime. But we'll continue on with that on the other side. I speak with Edward Curtin. This is the program TNT. We'll be right back.
Where, oh, where would we ever be without trans student educational resources and their pretty purple unicorn, the gender unicorn, to teach school children all about gender identity, gender expression, who they're physically attracted to, who they're emotionally attracted to, and what sex they were assigned at birth. Assigned! Like, we all come out neuter, and then the doctor or someone else, maybe someone bad in the government, just assigns them a gender. It has nothing to do with nature or biology or genetic makeup. Mm-mm. Gender is a fluid social construct. Where would we be? We'd be in a world where teachers weren't perverting school children and polluting their minds with things like the gender unicorn. From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative, this is Viewpoint.
The Caesar Rodney Election Research Institute, CRERI, investigated Zuckerberg's favored nonprofits, the Center for Technology and Civic Life, CTCL, and the Center for Election Innovation and Research, CEIR, and found nearly 99% of CTCL grants of $1 million or more in the battleground states of Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Texas, and Virginia went to cities and counties which Biden was certified as winning. In some places, the funds gave Democrat-leaning areas a more than 10-to-1 advantage in election resources. A grant program for 5 Wisconsin cities allowed these Democrat strongholds to spend roughly $47 per voter, compared to $4 to $7 per voter in traditionally Republican areas of the state, the Amistad Project, an election watchdog, revealed. Analysis by other groups like Influence Watch and the Foundation for Government Accountability found similar discrepancies.
If you want the jibby jab, all right, enough, then you've come to the wrong station. We mandate that the truth be told. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Edward Curtin is my guest. He is the author of Seeking Truth in a Country of Lies. And Ed, right before we went to the break, about a year ago, I was at a gathering. I'd been invited by the host. There were 5 or 6 men, and we were just having drinks. It was at a friend's house. I had not met the rest of the people that were going to be there. I just knew the host. And most of the people were tangentially involved with the entertainment business. And at some point during the conversation, of course, COVID came up and who was vaccinated. I was the only one who was not at that point. And there were a couple of people at the table just kind of semi-freaked out. And these are people, you know, from the entertainment business. And at one point, we discussed the origin of COVID, and several of these same people that were upset about me not having a vaccine said that they didn't really care where it came from because it didn't matter. And the reason I bring this up is, like, of course it matters. If you want justice and you want truth, then where this thing came from and how it emanated is of utmost importance not whether I am vaccinated or not, but you're more outraged about that.
Yeah, of course it matters where it came from. If it came out of a U.S. lab, and that matters. If it's a bioweapon,
yes.
I mean, the U.S. Yes. is into bioweapon research. It's been so. Here's a very odd, to take us back just briefly, I don't want to dwell on this, but Lee Harvey Oswald was connected to the weaponizing of cancer in New Orleans. And I heard your previous guest. Well, it's actually true. And the U.S. government has been, you know, trying to do this for, what is it, 50, 60 years now? I can't keep track of the time. But they never, ever, ever, you had mentioned if the U.S. government will admit their crimes. They're never going to admit their crimes.
No.
There may be a limited hangout put out there in which they'll admit some mistake, but they will never, never admit it. Even today as we speak, it's December 15th, I don't know whether there's any news whether Biden has released, President Biden has released the JFK files that are supposed to be released today. Right. But the JFK files are not going to tell us anything we don't already know. This is like we're going to debate this stuff forever and ever when the facts are very well known. We don't need to debate it. With COVID, it's the same thing. They're never going to admit their involvement with it, the propaganda around it. It's a joke, and people are locked into their positions even as the facts come out. The other day, I tweeted out a little sentence from the New York Times in which the Times said that you can get immunity from the vaccine or from having had COVID already. They're still pushing that the vaccines can prevent you when they admit that at this is the upside down world.
Yeah. I throw up my hands sometimes because I just can't even believe it. Now, I did hear for the first time this morning, I heard the term on the news, vaccine fatigue. And they were saying, oh, you know, people now have vaccine fatigue and they're not wanting to get another boost or something. And of course, by the end of the segment in the news, they were saying, oh, well, you still need to go get your vaccine. But I was like, little by little, eventually, a couple of years down the line, you begin to hear these things. But back to the Kennedy assassination or COVID or Ukraine or 9/11 or whatever it is, none of these things ever get disclosed. It just eventually becomes common knowledge of what happened. And it's like a secret within a family. We don't tell anybody, but we all know what happened.
Yeah, that's right. Secrets. We make believe it doesn't exist, what we already know. And we just, you know, go on. And we listen to the repetition. If we could go back to that for a second.
Please.
You know, I love sports, especially basketball.
Me too.
But I was watching the World Cup game, a number of the games, because I really enjoy that also. And but the repetition of plays, you know, and I put in that article when Christian Pulisic scored the goal in that game and got hurt. They kept repeating it over and over and over. There's probably like 6-8 reruns or replays. How many times do you have to see it? The guy scored a great goal and he got hurt. There's something sadistic about showing people getting hurt too. That
true.
You know, filters into our minds like we're supposed to like this? No. I don't want to see that again. That's horrible. But it's repetition.
It is, and I have to admit I didn't see that. But one of the things that you pointed out about the World Cup that I found interesting was this idea, the way they played off the U.S. Iran game as like, you know, good versus evil kind of thing. And I felt sorry for the Iranian team. they were in a very difficult position. And I worry about what happened to them when they went back to Iran. I don't know what happened to them.
No, I don't know either. And yeah, they were in a very difficult position. But the media, the U.S. media, politicized it all. And at the end of that game, it was actually a beautiful game to watch because the sportsmanship between the Iranians and the Americans was gorgeous. They were picking each other up. And when the game ended, they were hugging each other. You could see they had mutual respect. They were sportsmen. They weren't politicians. But the media wants to politicize everything. That's really terrible.
Yeah, and it's low-hanging fruit, too. It's like, that's, what is the just most sensationalist angle that we could put on this game? And that's what they chose. And I'm a big fan of Ron Paul, and he talks about sport, how it is a really excellent ambassadorish or ambassadorial, I don't even know if that's an actual word, but it's a great thing to let people from different parts of the world and different ideologies play sport, because it's just good for all of us. And it's what you saw in that match.
Yeah, absolutely. I think sports can be there's the money side of it, which is a very, very tricky situation,
yes.
You know, with billionaires owning all these teams and so forth. But yes, as it, sports as an ambassador, so to speak, I don't know what the right word is either, for international cooperation, learning about other cultures. The fellow who just died of an aneurysm, the soccer...
The journalist, Grant Wald.
Yeah. That was one of his big points always, that it's wonderful for that.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. It was a very sad story about his death. But he was, he thought soccer in particular, first he was a basketball journalist and then he became a soccer journalist. And he thought it was great to connect people across the world in a playful, I mean, sports, don't, you know, they're meaningless, even though you root for someone, it doesn't really matter. I see I'm jumping here. But Boris Becker just got out of the tennis great, got out of prison in the UK. And I remember him once saying after he lost the tennis match, well, I just lost. It was the finals, I think, at Wimbledon. And he had lost. And he said, well, look, I lost the tennis match. I didn't kill anyone.
Right.
I lost the tennis match.
Well, that is a good way to look at it. And I forgot about Boris Becker. What did he go to jail for? I don't remember what happened. Was it financial something?
Yeah, I don't know all the details. He was accused of somehow swindling money in a bankruptcy proceeding. Mm-hmm. I don't know the details. I couldn't pass judgment one way or the other. I wouldn't want
Understood.
To in any case.
Edward, in our last couple of minutes, I just want to ask you, what else is on your radar right now? What else are you looking to write on next? Because I could talk to you for days. What else is aching to come out and be spoken about?
Well, there's so much. I'm not exactly sure what I'm writing at the moment, but I'm writing something. never know right away, but I am writing a book about one book among a couple about the spiritual transformation of the world and especially of the United States, and how important those changes have been to where we're at now. So the connection between the loss of that fundamental spiritual dimension and all of this propaganda and insanity that we're immersed in now. So that's something that preoccupies me a lot these days.
I think one last question.
Yes.
One last question, because when I was reading about you, it says, one of the sentences says, and we'll make this quick, but he believes a non-committal sociology is an impossibility and therefore sees all work as an effort to enhance human freedom through understanding. What is a non-committal sociology, though?
Well, it's a sociology based on numbers, based on statistics, based on abstract notions, in which the sociologist is, you know, not part of the picture. And this has been developing again since the late 50s in the field of sociology. C. Wright Mills, the great sociologist, wrote a lot about it.
Wow. That sounds like our computer models again. Edward Curtin, thank you so much for your time today. Ladies and gentlemen, find his book, Seeking Truth in a Country of Lies, and his website, edwardcurtin.com. Ed, I believe you're on Twitter as well, because I think I'm following you. What's your Twitter handle there?
I'm not sure.
just ladies and gentlemen, just look for Edward Curtin. You guys, I got to run. Ed, thank you so much for the time. Ladies and gentlemen, I will be back here tomorrow. Thank you to TNT. Thank you to Dave and Alex, my producers. And most of all, thank you to my listeners. I appreciate you. And we got Christmas and holidays coming up. So hang tight. Be safe. I love you guys. I'll catch you tomorrow. Peace.